Irene Smalls has held a lot of jobs ranging from model, actress, and radio reporter to running her own business. But the job she likes best is writing children's books. She writes simple stories about her and her own childhood. Her straightforward tales expose the strong emotions of families and communities and the joyful effects they have on children as they grow up.
Knock, knock. Who's there? It's a story. A story who? Hi, it's Irene Smalls, Lady Junkanoo, with stories for you. Before I tell the stories, let me explain. In some of the stories, I will be speaking in African-American Negro dialect. African-American Negro dialect is a language where words are spoken in a musical style. Sometimes the words are picture words. Sometimes they're shortened versions of a longer word. And sometimes they're words that are new, created by the speakers of the dialect. When I was a little girl, my mother always told me that I was very smart. So when I went to school, I told my kindergarten teacher that I was smart enough already. I didn't need to go to school. My kindergarten teacher said, "Of course you're very smart. But we play games here, and we have snacks, too." And I thought about it, and I said, I love games, and I love snacks. And so I said, I guess my mother could manage without me for a little while. And so I decided I would stay at kindergarten for a little while to play a game or two and have some snack. My kindergarten teacher, Miss Loretta Abbott from PS90 in Harlem, New York, asked me would I like to sit up close to her, and I told her, "No, I don't want to do that." So I went and sat in the back of the room. Then she asked me would I like to learn how to read, and I said, "No, I don't want to do that." Then Miss Abbott went and got a book, and she started to read. The poem Encouragement by Paul Laurence Dunbar.
Who's that knocking at the door? Why, ooh, it's Ike Johnson, for sure. I'm mighty glad you come. Speak up, Ike. Express yourself. Bless my soul, I most forgot to tell you about Tilda Scott. Come Thursday night, she's gonna marry Lucius Watt. Miss Anne always said I was a heap likely in her. I could marry in a week if the man I wants would speak. Go ahead, Ike, express yourself.
Or Miss Abbott would read, "Little brown baby with the sparkling eyes, who's daddy's partner and mama's joy? Little brown baby with the sparkling eyes." And at 5, I was the little brown baby girl, so I knew exactly who Paul Laurence Dunbar was talking about in his poem, Little Brown Baby. I went to my kindergarten teacher, Miss Abbott, and I said,
Miss, teacher,
and she said, "What?" I said, "I want to do what you do. You open up these books, and out comes this sound and this music, and I want to make the sounds and the music the way you do." And she said, "The sounds of books, the music of books, that's called reading." And I thought about it, and I said, I want to do that. Teach me to read. And so I became a reader and a teller of stories. And I'm here today to share my stories with you. Now, when someone asks me where I get my stories come from a very funny place. They come from the tip of my nose. Yes, that's where all my stories come from, the tip of my nose. Now, you say, how can stories come from the tip of anybody's nose? I will tell you exactly how I find stories at the tip of my nose. The first story that I ever wrote was called Irene and the Big Fine Nickel. And you know what? My name is Irene. And this Irene had a brother named Jimmy and a sister named Yvonne, and I have a brother named Jimmy and a sister named Yvonne, too. And this Irene grew up in Harlem, New York, and so did I. So who do you think that story is really about? You guessed it. Irene and the Big Fine Nickel is a story that I wrote about myself when I was 7 years old. To write that story, I put my finger at the tip of my nose. I think about the things that are right in front of my face when I have my finger on the tip of my nose. And in my memory, I remember my friends and I, Lulabel and Lulamay, and we were playing Down, Down, Baby, Down, Down the Roller Coaster, Sweet, Sweet Baby, I'll Never Let You Go. Shimmy, shimmy, coco pop, shimmy, shimmy, pow, shimmy, shimmy, coco pop, shimmy, shimmy, pow. Grandma, Grandma, oh, sick in bed. She called the doctor, and the doctor said, let's get the rhythm of the head, ding dong. Let's get the rhythm of the head, ding dong. Let's get the rhythm of the hands, one, two, three. Let's get the rhythm of the hands, one, two, three. Let's get the rhythm of the feet, one, two, three. Let's get the rhythm of the feet, one, two, three. Let's get the rhythm of the hot dog. Let's get the rhythm of the hot dog. Put it all together, and what have you got? Ding dong, clap, clap, stomp, stomp, hot dog. Put it all backwards and see what you've got. Hot dog, stomp, stomp, clap, clap, ding dong. The next book that I wrote, Jonathan and His Mommy, was a love song for my son. Let me tell you about my son, Jonathan. When he was small, he was the busiest person. We would go for a walk, and he would run away, and I was always chasing him. Jonathan, Jonathan, would you please come here? Jonathan! There at the tip of my nose was my son Jonathan running, running, running away. I didn't know what to do. And then I remembered kindergarten. I made our walks a game and our games a walk. The story Jonathan and His Mommy goes like this. I like to go walking and talking with my mom. First we zigzag walk down the street. It looks strange to the people we meet. Then we take big, giant steps, and we talk in loud, giant voices, and we say big things the way giants must talk. I say, do you see that humongous mammoth among us? After that, we take itsy-bitsy baby steps, itsy-bitsy baby steps. And we talk in tiny baby voices about baby things, itsy-bitsy spiders, tiny dreams, and small marshmallows. Next, we take bunny steps. Hop-hop, 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 hip-hop too sometimes. As we wiggle our noses and we wiggle our ears and we look so funny that we end up in tears. Tears that dry with the wind. As we take fast running steps, running our race. You're the winner. I'm the misser. I see on my mom's face, sometimes she can't keep up with my fast pace. So I slow it down. And we do slow motion steps, slow motion steps. As we talk about molasses and birthdays and how long they take. And just before we're about to fall asleep, we take a leap onto our toes and we do ballet steps, arms in the air, twirling round and round till our feet touch the ground. Then we do crazy crisscross steps, crazy crisscross steps. Mommy steps and I step and our legs cross. Mommy steps and I step and our legs crazy cross. The one who makes the last step is the boss of the crisscross. After crossing a fast and our last crisscross, we move on to reggae steps. Put your hands on your heart. You feel that heartbeat there? We move on to reggae steps, hips swaying, feet step, step sliding, bodies moving side to side to the beat of our hearts. Then we take backward steps, to all the places we've been, which is good because by that time, we're tired. And we take Jonathan and Mommy steps, Jonathan and Mommy steps, and we walk our way back home. And that's Jonathan and his mommy, the love song, and the story that I found at the tip of my nose. Jonathan is also a character in another book I've written called Because You're Lucky, a book about sharing. Because You're Lucky features a very important person in my life, my nephew, Kevin Logan. I wrote a book just for Kevin called Kevin and His Dad. Here's Kevin's story. On Saturday, with Mom away, Dad and I work, then we play. First we railroad the rug, choo-choo coming through. I love cleaning up with you. Then we clean, clean, clean the windows, wipe white, clean them right. My dad shines in the window's light. Then we pitch, pitch, pitch the papers, basket, basket, basket the books, tidy, tidy, tidy the toys. We even dust, dust, dust the dog. After all that is done, we go out and have even more fun. First we run, run, run a race and dance, dance all over the place. Time goes fast, so very, very fast. I wish today could last and last and last. Dad takes my hand and slows down. I understand. And we walk through town. It's a long walk. We have a quiet talk and smile. I love being with my dad. He's the best friend a guy ever had. In writing stories that I find at the tip of my nose, I write about the things I do every day, the people I see, the things I love. Whenever you have to think of something to write and all your ideas seem out of sight, just look around at the things you found right at the tip of your nose. Your sister, your brother, your Auntie Lou. Just think of all the things you do. Baseball, football, playing the kazoo. Story ideas can happen for you too. Where? Right at the tip of your nose. Another story that I found at the tip of my nose was a story about my daughter Dawn. The story is called Dawn and the Round to It. Dawn always woke up early in the morning. Dawn dawning at dawn is what Dawn's mother called it. Dawn at 5 was round and brown. Round enough to cuddle and brown like the cuddliest bear. Dawn stretched. And she was instantly awake. Dawn called out, "Mommy! Mommy! I want to get up!" But nobody came. So Dawn stood up on her bed and she sang out, "Somebody come and play today! Somebody come and play and sing a song! It won't take long! Would somebody come and play?" Dawn's mother said, "Go back to bed, Dawn. It's too early to get up." But Dawn was tired of sleeping, and she didn't want to go back to bed. So she wrapped herself in a yellow blanket and sucked her thumb all by herself. When Dawn's mommy got up, Dawn said, "Mommy, mommy, I want to play tic-tac-toe, mommy. I want to watch cartoons and..." But Dawn's mommy said, "I would love to play with you, Dawn, but, oh my gosh, look at the time. I'm late for a meeting. Dawnie, please, hurry. Put on your shoes and socks. I'll try to play with you later. If I can get around to it tonight after dinner, I'll try." And Dawn's mommy left. And Dawn went to talk to her father.
Daddy! Daddy! Can you read me a story now?
And Dawn's daddy said,
Well, golly, Dawn, I would love to read you a story right now, but I, too, am late for a meeting at the office. I'm not able to read at this time. Perhaps later. I'll see if I can get around to it this evening. After my Rotary meeting, Dawn, I've got to go.
And Dawn's daddy left. Dawn went into her brother's room.
David, can you talk with me now?
And Dawn's brother said,
Dawny, I have to meet my friend Kevin to play football. But maybe we can talk later, if I can get around to it.
And Dawn's brother left. Dawn went into her sister's room.
Hazel, can you talk with me, sing with me, read with me, play with me, anything?
Dawn's sister Hazel said,
Well, you know what I'm saying, Dawn. You know what I'm saying here, girl. You know what I'm saying here? You know, I got your back. You know what I'm saying here? But, you know, I got a busy schedule right now. You know what I'm saying here? I got to meet my friends. You know what I'm saying here? You know what I'm saying? But I would really, you know, girl, I love to play with you right now. You know what I'm saying? I really would, girl. But you know what I'm saying here? I can't do it right now. You know what I'm saying here? But I'll hook you up later. You know, I got your back. You know what I'm saying here?
And Dawn's sister left. When the babysitter came, she was busy talking on the telephone, and Dawn felt so sad. Dawn went off into a corner by herself. Her sucking finger didn't taste as good as it usually did, and even her yellow blanket didn't make her feel better. Dawn took a piece of paper and she started drawing squiggly lines and scribbly scrabbly lines. And Dawn mumbled, Nobody has any time for me. They all say they'll play when they can get around to it. Dawn started drawing round circles all around the page. And Dawn said, when they can get around to it. Around to it.
Sudden, Dawn had this wild, crazy idea. Dawn started to giggle, and she couldn't stop. She felt as if giggle bubbles were wiggling out of her ears and tickling out of her mouth.
Dawn drew 4 round pictures, one for her mother, one for her father, one for her sister, and one for her brother. When Dawn's mother came home, she looked at Dawn and said,
You certainly are a smiley one today. And Dawn flashed a marshmallow marmalade smile.
The next morning, Dawn got up
early and she sang out, Somebody come and play today. Somebody come and play and sing a song. It won't take long. Would somebody please come and play?
Nobody came. Dawn got down off her bed, and she went and got the 4 pictures she had made. Dawn went into her mommy and her daddy's room. Dawn gave one of her pictures to her mother. Her mother looked at it and yawned,
Oh, that's nice, daughter. What is it?
Dawn said,
It's around to it. You said you would play with me when you got around to it. So I made you around to it. Now, can we play?
Dawn's mother started to cry.
Oh, my goodness, she said. Oh, my goodness.
Dawn's daddy said, Out of the mouth of babes. Dawn gave around to it to her sister, who snickered,
No, you didn't do that, girl, did you?
And to her brother, who laughed. So now when Dawn gets up
early in the morning
and sings her song,
Somebody come and play today. Somebody come and play and sing a song. It won't take long. Somebody come and play.
Dawn's mother, Dawn's daddy, and sometimes even her brother and her sister get up to play with Dawn. Dawn's mother wrote a poem about it. To Dawn at Dawn. I say hello to Dawn at Dawn, and she smiles. eyes wide open to see what she can see. I say hello to Dawn at dawn, and she laughs. Her laughter wakens my sleepy soul, and so I rise to serve. I say hello to dawn at dawn, and I smile at my ebony dawn. Dawn and the Round to It is my daughter Dawn's favorite children's story. I hope you liked it too. In writing stories, I write and tell stories about history too. I take the people that I know and put them back in the past. Then I go to the library and read books and find out how people in the past spoke, what they wore, and what they ate, and then I use that research, that information, in my stories. That is a way I can take people I find at the tip of my nose and put them back in time. I've been writing 12 months of children's stories, one for each month of the year. I'd like to share with you one of my stories. Do you like scary stories? Well, I've written a scary story for Halloween, and it's called Jenny Reen and the Jack-ma-Lantern.
Once upon a time, when the great mountains were high, before they were pebbled apart into the sandy beach we are standing on today, before today's present time of laughter, there was a time of great tears, tears that ran so deep and so full. Rivers were made that still flow. But in this time of tears, there was still joy. Joy because there were children. Children with round cheeks and round curls. Such a child was Jenny Reen. On the day before Halloween, Jenny Reen was strutting around the slave quarter, feeling fit as a fiddle. Jenny Reen was being taken care of by Sister Louisa, her Nana, while her daddy and her mommy, Mary Ellen, worked in the fields. Jenny Reen asked Sister Louisa,
"What to Mosby?"
And Sister Louisa answered,
"Child, when day clean come, it's All Hallows' Eve. On All Hallows' Eve, all manner of creatures and beasties is about. But the worstest creature, the worstest creature by far is the Jack-ma-Lantern."
"Jack-ma-Lantern? What's a Jack-ma-Lantern?"
Jenny Reen asked.
"The Jack-ma-Lantern is a terrible creature covered with hair like a dog. And he has googly-duggly eyes that float around in bloody red sockets. The Jack-ma-Lantern has magical powers. He can leap higher than a mountain. And his strength is beyond all human resistance. 10 men couldn't wrestle a Jack-ma-Lantern to the dirt. And the Jack-ma-Lantern, he wanders through the woods looking for people that he can lead to their destruction. The Jack-ma-Lantern comes up and taps you on the shoulder, and then you have to follow him into the swamps and slowly sink and slowly die. So whatever you do, child, stay out of them woods. 'Cause the Jack-ma-Lantern will get you if you don't watch out."
And Jenny Reen said, "Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, not me. Oh, no. I don't want to go. Oh, no. But Jenny, me no Jack-ma-Lantern. Oh, no." Jenny Reen's Nana continued,
"There's no power on earth to save you once the Jack-ma-Lantern's got you in his clutches. The onlyest thing that a body can do is to take off his'n or her'n out of garment and put it on inside out. Now you hear me, child? The onlyest thing that you can do to save yourself from the Jack-ma-Lantern is to take off your jacket or your coat, your outer garment, and put it on inside out. Then that foul fiend is deprived of all his power. to cause harm.
Jenny Wren said, well, I stayed away from that creature, that Jack O'Lantern.
The next day, Jenny Wren's Nana had to send Jenny Wren on an errand. Jenny Wren's Nana said,
Jenny Wren, child, I want you to go to Miss Catherine's and ask her if she can see her way clear to give me a pinch of sassafras roots for my tea.
Yes'm, yes'm, Jenny Wren said. Oh, yes'm, ma'am. I'll go to Miss Catherine's and I'll be right back.
Well, Jenny Wren set off along the path. Jenny Wren was walking along the path to Miss Catherine's,
and all of a sudden, a butterfly appeared and wanted to play tag. And Jenny Wren, I mean, Jenny Wren had to play tag, and she started chasing and running, and oh, my goodness, and
she wandered deeper and deeper into the woods.
And then in the woods, she saw these beautiful red flowers, and oh, she saw a little bunny, and she said, wait, Jenny Wren was having the best time, just following the animals and looking at the flowers and wandering about, and all of a sudden she heard, hoo, hoo. An owl was hooting. The sun was slipping down the sky, and Jenny Wren said, oh, my goodness, I gotta get to Miss Catherine's. Wait a minute now, which way did I come? Wait a minute now, was it by those trees, or was it over there by that clearing? Wait a minute. I gotta go home. I gotta find my way. I don't know. Jenny Wren, she ran up the path as far as she could go. And no, that's not the way I came. And maybe the other way. And she ran back and no. Jenny Wren was lost on All Hallows' Eve. She was lost and alone in the woods. Jenny Wren stopped. She hadn't heard anything, but she started to feel kind of funny. I mean, first she felt hot, and then she felt cold, and then she felt itchy and scratchy, and, you know, her skin began to crawl, and she wasn't sure what was happening. She was itching and scratching all over, and I was like, oh my goodness, and she looked, and to the right, there was nobody there. And then she looked to the left. Nobody there either. And then she turned around, back front.
There he was! The Jack-o'-lantern. A wild, mannish-looking creature with bulging eyes.
And the Jack-o'-lantern called out to her.
Jenny Wren! Jenny Wren! Come here, my pretty! Jenny Wren!
Well, Jenny Wren didn't want to go with any mean old jack-o'-lantern, so she picked up her heels and she took off.
But the jack-o'-lantern was there, in front of her.
And she stopped short, and she ran the other way, but the jack-o'-lantern was still there. And Jenny Wren zigged and she zagged, she bobbed and she weed. But the jack-o'-lantern was always right there in front of her. And finally, Jenny Wren couldn't run anymore. Her face was scratched and her dress was torn, and Jenny Wren just couldn't run anymore.
The Jack-o'-lantern could see that she was ready to be his prey. He called out again,
Jenny Wren! Jenny Wren! I've got you! Jenny Wren!
The Jack-o'-lantern came closer and closer. Jenny Wren knew that her Nana had told her how to escape from the Jack-o'-lantern, but she couldn't remember. She couldn't remember. The Jack-o'-lantern was now so close that Jenny Wren could almost see into his googly-goggly eyes, rolling around with delight. And then, thinking of her sweet Nana made Jenny Wren feel calm. And she heard her Nana's voice.
Jenny Wren, the only thing that can protect you is to take your outer garment and put it on inside out. Then the Jack-o'-lantern can't harm you.
And Jenny Rean, just as swiftly as she could, she reached and took her jacket and turned it on inside out, inside out. And at that moment, the jack-o'-lantern reached out and touched her. But he touched her too late. And the jack-o'-lantern shouted, "Aah!" And he went screeching, screeching off into the woods, deep into the woods, all by himself.
Jenny Rean was so, so tired, but she had to get home, and she was still a little scared, but Jenny Rean, crying as she walked, Jenny Rean found her way out of the woods, and Jenny Rean found the search party that had been sent to look for her. Jenny Rean's mama and daddy were there, and Sister Louisa. Jenny Rean's daddy picked her up and placed her on his shoulders. Jenny Rean sobbed, "I'm so sorry. Do you still love me? I didn't listen, and I went to the wood. I'm so sorry." Sister Louisa answered, "Child, we couldn't love you anymore if you were the worstest one or one of the bestest one or about the levelest one. If we loved you anymore, Jenny Rean, our hearts would break."
Jenny Rean's mama reached up and hugged her. Jenny Rean's daddy kissed her and kissed her. Jenny Rean is back with her family, a very happy family, because their precious Jenny Rean is safe. Being with family is so wonderful. It's really a time for Thanksgiving. Just as in the story, a straw beater's Thanksgiving. Do you know what a straw beater is? A straw beater is a musician who beats two straws over the left shoulder of the fiddler. A straw beater makes a sound like a snare drum. Tum-ti-ti-tum, tum-ti-ti-tum, tum-ti-ti-tum. And the straw beater, as in our story, A Straw Beater's Thanksgiving, plays at corn-shucking dances. Do you know what a corn-shucking is? Well, a corn-shucking is when farmers gather all their corn stalks into a great big mountain of corn in a field. And then everybody gets together and they shuck that corn. And corn shuckings were very, very important in the 1800s because shucks were the principal source of food for the animals for the winter. Shucks were used to make beds. Shucks were used to make hats, medicine, toys, wick for lamps, and baskets. Shucks were a very important thing to have. It was late November and the harvesting was done. With the overseer at the front of the line, the slaves made their way to the fields. There they pulled the corn stalks, throwing them into the wagons for the corn shucking. The slaves' voices rose and fell with the movement of their hands. Come day, go day, God send Sunday. Come day, go day, God send Sunday. Come day, go day, God send Sunday. Jess, a young boy, and Sis Weeza, his mother, pull the loose bits of cornstalk. Jess sang, "Slip shuck corn, little while, slip shuck corn, little while, I say."
Jess said, "Mama, this time I want to be old fiddler straw beater."
His mama laughed. "Cha, you kicked the sweetening out of a ginger snap." Nathaniel, a big bear of a boy, at the head of the work line, hurried to the back of the line. He heard what Jess had said.
"Jess, you can't be no straw beater. I's the straw beater."
And the hulking boy pushed Jess to the ground. Jess looked up and said, "I's gonna be straw beater this time." Jess got up and went back to work. Jess said, "Mama, do you think I could be fiddler straw beater?" "What do you think, Jess?" she answered.
"Well, I thinks I can."
"Then you can," his mama said.
Jess asked, "Mama, tell me again about the corn shucking."
She said the general gives out the song, and they get the hog bladders, and they blow full of them air, and they hold them in the fire, and they go pop, 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 and they can be dancing the jig and the pigeon wing. The horn blew. The slaves trudged back to the slave quarter. Finally, the night of the corn shucking arrived. After a full day of work, the harvest moon shining brightly, Jess, Siskwiza, and a whole group of the others set off. Jess's group arrived just as the fence rail was being set atop the mountainous corn pile, dividing it in two sections. This was accompanied by much wrangling. Once the fence rail was set, the corn shucking contest was on. Shuckers were divided into two groups. Two corn generals were chosen to lead the opposing sides. Each general mounted his side of the corn mountain. Nathaniel made sure he was on the opposite side to Jess. Thaddeus, corn general for Jess's side, called from the top of the corn mountain, an ear of corn in each hand. Here is your corn shucker, oh, 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 oh. Here is your corn ruler, oh, 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 oh. Here is your straw beater, oh, 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 oh. The shucker sang again and sang again, and the work began. The slaves laughed and joked as they worked furiously, tearing open the corn husk. Slip shuck corn, little while, slip shuck corn, little while, slip shuck corn. Little while I say, slip shuck corn, little while, slip shuck corn, little while, slip shuck corn, little while I say. The air filled with shucks. Ears of corn flew from the slaves' hands, arcing into the corn cribs. Nathaniel threw a corn cob. Jess ducked. Then, triumphantly, shucking the last ear of corn, Nathaniel sang out, round up corn, double up, round up corn, round up corn, double up, round up corn, round up corn, double up, double up corn. And the corn shucking was done. The last ear of corn was shucked. It was time to pick the straw beater, the special one who plays with the fiddler at the corn shucking dance. Fiddler stood up. He carved a circle in the dirt with his foot.
The toughest wrestling boy will be straw beater tonight.
Nathaniel, the big bear of a boy, tossed down his coat.
I can fling any of you to inches from the ground.
Little old tiny Jess took a deep breath and entered the ring. Nathaniel laughed. He grabbed Jess and flung him clean over his shoulder. Jess, staggered up. I won't give up. I won't give up, he said. I will be straw beater. Nathaniel took Jess and put him down on the ground and just held him there for a few minutes, and then he said, do you give up yet? Jess says, I won't give up. Nathaniel let Jess get back up. And then Jess, his head hurt and his back hurt, and he wasn't sure what he was going to do, but Jess was going to be straw beater. Jess put his feet on the ground, and he reached down, and he grabbed Nathaniel around the middle, and he held him, as tight as he could, and he just squeezed and held on, and Nathaniel pushed this way, but he couldn't let go of Jess's grip, and he pulled that way, but he couldn't get Jess to let go, and he jerked, and he twisted, but Jess held on and on and on. Finally, someone in the crowd said, can we get on with the dancing? Old Fiddler grinned and said, straw beater Jess, let's the jigs begin. So little old tiny Jess got to be the special one, the straw beater. Not because he was the biggest, not because he was the strongest, but because he tried the hardest. And Jess went up to his mama, and he said, Mama, Mama, I'm straw beater. Mama, I'm straw beater. And Jess's mama said, My heart leaps in my chest when I sees my baby, Strawbeater Jess. Trying hard is so important. You can try hard in many ways. In my last story, Irene Jenny, The Christmas Masquerade, The John Kankus, it's a story from the past about a little girl who wishes as hard as she can. She wishes with all her might. The John Kankus is an African-American Christmas celebration that is 200 years old. It started in Africa in the 1700s and traveled around the world. During the 1800s in North Carolina, the John Kankus was celebrated by the entire community, both blacks and whites. And the John Kankus was a celebration where everything was made out of found objects, rags, tatters, and recycled materials. So here is the story, Irene Jenny and the Christmas Masquerade, The John Kankus.
In the morning when I rise, tell my Jesus howdy. Wash my hands in the morning's glory. Tell my Jesus howdy.
The godmother's song in the early morning Carolina sun, sparkling in the speckled dew, told Irene Jenny that Christmas had arrived. Irene Jenny didn't feel the Christmas spirit at all. The godmother was happy and in full voice. She was one of the best cooks at the big house, and as a reward for her skill, she had been given extra rations as a Christmas gift. After having cooked all day Christmas Eve for the master's Christmas feast, the godmother was now baking pies and cakes for Christmas Day in the quarters.
Make sure you wash behind them ears. Got so much dirt behind them you could grow taters, the godmother jested.
Yes'm,
Irene Jenny whispered. Christmas on the plantation was usually a time of jubilee. But on this Christmas Day, Irene Jenny was sad. Her daddy, Charles Hubert, who was known far and wide as a fine fiddling man, had been hired out by Massa McNeil to the neighboring plantation for a Christmas party. Mary Ellen, Irene Jenny's mama, had been rented out, too. Irene Jenny didn't know if they would be back home before Christmas was all over or if they would ever come back home at all.
Godmama,
Irene Jenny asked,
do you think if I asked Massa, he would bring my mama and my dad at home?
Now you hush, child. Don't ask the devil not to sin. You can't ask Massa nothing. Child, you don't want to know trouble like that,
the godmother cautioned. Irene Jenny studied for a few moments, and then she said with a sigh,
Godmama, does the Lord care about little colored girls?
Child, his eyes on the sparrow. Follow the spirit, child. The spirit won't lead you far from wrong,
the godmother said.
Irene Jenny closed her eyes and silently prayed with all the spirit she could muster. Lord, if you could see your way clear on this your most special day, Lord, all I want for Christmas is my mom and my daddy back.
The godmother came over to Irene Jenny, sitting in the corner of the cabin, and murmured,
rest your nerves, child. You won't be crying and feeling sad once those cooners get here.
Cooners. Just hearing the name made Irene Jenny think of smiling. Cooners was one of the names for the members of the John Kankus troupe. For as long as Irene Jenny could remember, the John Kankus had marched through the quarters on Christmas Day, spreading the Christmas spirit, bringing with them a melee of fun and laughter. By any name, Cooners, John Kankus, or John Connors, the troupe of musicians, dancers, and singers meant a great time. But today,
Godmama, even the funniest parade can't take away my sadness,
Irene Jenny whispered. Suddenly, Kevin, the slave quarter lookout, came running up the road, breathless with excitement.
The John Kinkins isn't coming! The John Kinkins isn't coming! He shouted at each slave cabin.
Irene Jenny headed for the door. Outside, she joined a crowd. It seemed that everyone was rushing toward the roadway.
The godmother busted out the door, too, apron flying. "Eyes right behind you, child," she called.
Young or old, no one wanted to miss the John Kinkins. Down the road, the John Kinkins revelers came.
Hi-lo, here we go, Kuna's coming. Hi-lo, here we go, Kuna's coming. Hi-lo, here we go, Kuna's coming!
On and on down the road, the beastmen and the birdmen came, twisting and turning with the acrobats dancing and dancing. The strips of brightly colored cloth were haranguing the air, twisting this way, then that way, with the spirited dancing and frenzied motion to the music. Jubilant, they marched into the quarter.
Blow that horn, the crowd yelled.
The Cooners had all manners of horns, cow horns, sheep horns, and bull horns, and each musician seemed to be playing with every breath in his body.
Ta-ta, ta-ta! Irene Jenny cupped her hands and made her own Cooner horn.
Blow that horn, the crowd yelled again, and blow that horn, the ragtag band of Connors did. Sharp notes and tatters tearing the sky. For the longest time, everyone danced wildly, hands in the air. The crowd was singing, "The Cooners are here! The Cooners are here!" they cried. Swept up by the rhythms and the colors, Irene Jenny bobbed up and down, her arms and legs flailing to the Cooners' beat.
"Godmama, I don't know what part of the John Kinkins I likes the best. The dancers, the acrobats, the singers, all the musicians!"
On and on, into the afternoon, the Cooners came down the road, up toward the big house. Some wore horns, some wore caps. Billowing gossamer clouds of cloth sprang from their shoulders. They blew and beat the drums and danced their funny birdie steps, mincing and prancing as they came.
Christmas comes but once a year, ho-dang-do-rango. Everyone should have a share, ho-dang-do-rango.
Ho-dang-do-rango, the crowd yelled back. Then came the John Kinkins, the leader himself. He was preceded by the Gumbe Box players, 2 dozen men strong. The Gumbe Box was a simple box covered with sheepskin. The singers set the rhymes, but the John Kinkins was dominated, created by the beat of the Gumbe Box. Boom, bam, boom, bam, that Gumbe Box beat. Boom, bam, boom, bam, that Gumbe Box beat, beat, beat. Beat that box, beat that box. Heaven itself must have heard those Cooners beating. Almost as loud as the Gumbe Boxes, matching them beat for beat was the sounds of the triangles, the jawbones, and beef ribs played by the other musicians. Mask askew, they beated the sky, colors flying. This year, the John Kinkins leader was a mountain of a man, nigh about 7 feet tall, with a stuffed hat, animal skin. He towered at 8 feet.
So tall, he most scraped the clouds out of the sky.
Irene Jenny exclaimed in wonder.
"I see it, child," the godmother said,
and she and Irene Jenny joined hands and danced. The John Kinkins himself, the great John Kinkins, first he jigged, and then he jiggled back. Then he hunched his back, then he straightened it, and kicking and flinging his legs, the John Kinkins caroused the air. As he danced, 2 acrobats did backflips, 1 on each side of him. The slave quarter went wild. Suddenly, there was a moment of silence as the John Kinkins started his special dance, showing his best steps and movements. Dancing where the spirit moved him, ringed around him were his court, the beastmen, the birdmen, the musicians, the acrobats, and the dancers. Irene Jenny looked on in amazement. The John Kinkins finished. And the crowd erupted again! As the melee and movement died down, the handsomest of the Cooners, dressed in his church clothes and carrying a tin cup, went to each person and sang out, "Oh, poor Cooners John, oh, poor Cooners John, give the Cooners 1 more cent, give the Cooners 1 more cent for me, my lady." The godmother pressed 1 shiny penny into Irene Jenny's hand, and Irene Jenny dropped it into the cup, saying, "Thank ye." As the line of Cooners marched on, heading toward the big house, singing and dancing the Christmas day away, as the excitement in the quarters died down, Irene Jenny started to remember how much she missed her mama and daddy.
Her laughter waned to smiles, and her smiles were weakening into tears. Lord, Lord, all I want's for Christmas is my mama and my daddy back, she whispered. She downheartedly watched the last of the Cooners.
Cooners going, Cooners going, Cooners going.
Irene Jenny glanced at the Cooners. And as she looked, suddenly she couldn't believe that what she was hearing. She couldn't believe what she was seeing. There at the end of the Cooner's line, at the very tail end, there was her mama and her daddy. And her daddy was playing his fiddle, and Jubilee! Oh, Jubilee! Irene Jenny shouted, Mama! Mama! Daddy! Daddy! Irene Jenny ran, and in her ignorance, she jumped on her mama, and then she jumped on her daddy. And her daddy said,
How's my sweet girl doing?
Oh, Daddy! Irene Jenny's mama said, Child, we knew you'd be missing us.
Irene Jenny's daddy continued.
You know, it was the strangest thing. We had a whole mess of cleaning up to do after the party, but Massa all of a sudden told us to head home. He didn't have to tell us twice.
Irene Jenny's mama Muriel and finished with,
It's never too late to celebrate Christmas. Irene Jenny said, I was fixing the bus with happiness. Merry Christmas, Jubilee. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. I got my Christmas wish. I got my Christmas wish. Merry Christmas, Jubilee.
As Irene Jenny and her family kissed and hugged, the Cooners' chorusing and music could still be faintly heard.
Poor massa, so they say, down in the hills, so they say, got no money, so they say, not one shilling, so they say, God Almighty bless you, so they say.
Between hugs and kisses, Irene Jenny said, the Cooners' laughter and songs make a perfect Christmas serenade.
And this time, I got the best Christmas present of all. Hallelujah.
The clock on the wall is ticking. That's all. It's been fun, but our time is done. From the tip of my nose to the bottom of my heart, I have enjoyed sharing my stories of Jonathan and his mommy, Kevin and his dad, and Dawn and the Round to It with you. I hope that you want to do that, to read and read and then read some more. Then a story will always be knocking at your door. May the Jack O'Lantern never get you. May you be a straw beater of life with the spirit of the John Kinkis, a melee of motion and music. This is Irene Smalls, Lady John Canoe, saying goodbye to you.